Hi, everybody.
Hello. Hello, Dave.
Hi.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Good evening, everybody. Is Mac here?
Just checked in, Dave.
Very good. And Andy. And Mindy.
I'm here.
And Carolyn. Jennifer.
I'm here.
Good. And Deb. And Ron.
I'm here.
Go. And Phyllis. And Jerry. And David. And Sandra.
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, there she is. And Oliver.
Hey, Dave, I'm here.
Good. And Amy. All right. So welcome back. This is session 5. Of the Art and Science of Using DISC in Coaching. Tonight we're going to talk some more about the classical patterns and how they impact the DISC styles. I think you guys have a good feel, though, from last session, how important these style combinations really are. Because without them, you're kind of stuck with basic DISC, which doesn't always tell you what you have to know to really be effective.
Yeah, Dave, so, this is Ron.
I
fully agree with that. I just wanted to add, I still stick with what I was saying in the previous week, which I hope we're going to, or you're going to be able to elaborate a bit for me in this session. I still think there are now two distinct levels of looking at the DISC, which is looking at the pure highs and lows and overuses and what have you. But then I think there's this combination which I struggle just a little bit at this point in time to actually correlate that to the original pure format of just looking at high Ds or high Cs or whatever. So that's where I stand at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, and the concept of, you know, the pure style is an elementary use of DISC. It's one that too many folks get stuck on. Learn, you start with the basics, and that's where you start with DIS and C, but a lot of practitioners get hung up right there, and that's where they kind of stay. And that's not going to get you the results you want to get. It's also going to be somewhat misleading to your clients in terms of what they actually need to do to make themselves successful.
Hey, Dave, it's Oliver here.
Yes, Oliver.
Where I struggle with this, intuitively I can understand that somebody's a, for example, like you yourself said, you're a D and a C. That makes sense to me. Where I struggle with is when some people are of a blend of opposite pure profiles, like an I and a C, mm-hmm. or is there an S and a D? That blows my mind. I mean, what would make somebody have personality traits of opposite profiles?
Okay, so keep in mind, first of all, it's not a personality trait. It's a behavioral
right.
trait.
Yep, behavior. Okay.
And then, you know, what can make that? I mean, you know, a lot of things cause that. And it's not that people are weird. And I have to tell you, sometimes people who have that IC or S&D pattern, They go through life feeling a little odd. More than once I've been told when I've done someone's profile and they've had that IC and explained to them that it's normal and this is what it means, they go, oh, God, thanks, because I've always felt just weird. I've always felt like I didn't belong because I didn't know what I was. And it really is a matter of how they're going to react to things and how they've been taught. Behaviors are learned. And we learn these things oftentimes at a very early age. And so if you have parents who have different styles, or maybe you're exposed to parents and then could easily be exposed to parents and exposed into a nanny or to a daycare center where people treat differently, they can develop different kinds of traits. So I know it feels a bit odd to say someone that IC or that S and D combination, but it does happen, and it just means that they look at things differently than a peer style would. So, does that help you a little bit, I hope?
Yeah, it does, because I happen to be an I and a C, so thank you for explaining that I'm not schizophrenic. Thank you.
Well, no, I didn't say that. You might be schizophrenic for all I know, but I mean...
That was my high I talking. Thank you.
Ah, okay, good. All right. So a couple things here before we get too deep today. I've had something come up in my life, an emergency that I'm going to have to take care of. So I'm going to be out of town. I'm not available at the end of the week here, and including for Thursday night. Now, I'm going to be able to do the class Thursday night. That won't be a problem. But normally what I would do is I would, finish up Thursday night's class and then send out everyone the final exam, or I should say the certification exam, which you can take then to get certified in DISC. And you have a week to get that complete. But I'm really going to be doing it on the road here and won't have access to my computer. What I'm going to do, I'm going to send you the exam out a little early, and you'll still have the regular time period to get it done, in other words, a week from Thursday to get it done. I will tell you, though, if I send it to you, you submit it back right away, I'm not going to be able to respond to you with how you did on it. So you'll get it before Thursday's class. You're probably going to get it tomorrow sometime. But I won't be able to grade them until after I get back from my personal emergency. Any questions about that?
Dave, how long do we have for the...
You'll have a week from Thursday to get it complete.
And the exam is multiple choice, or how many questions and such do you
like
have any
20
information?
Questions on there, and a couple of them are, there's a few short essay, if you will, is it a sentence or two essay? Most of them are like choose the appropriate response, that kind of thing.
Okay. This is
I say it's harder than the CTA exam is, but I wouldn't call it a hard exam.
Okay.
If you pay attention in class, you're in the reading, you're going to be just fine. And, of course, it's open notes, open book, too, so you won't get too far off.
Is it a time, something that will log out if you're logged in to it?
No, it's actually sent to you via email.
Okay.
Yeah, so you'll have plenty of time to get it done that way. So it really shouldn't be a problem, I don't believe.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
And Dave, this certifies us with who exactly?
With nobody, exactly. Let me explain what I mean by that. Okay, so DISC is a tool that does not require certification to buy, which is why you have so many unqualified practitioners out there using DISC. What this exam certifies is that you have studied DISC, you have applied the concepts to the studies, if you will, and passed an exam. So you can call yourself a certified DISC practitioner. But there is no governing body on DISC who's going to sit there and say, aha, you took that exam? Bah. Doesn't really count because there is no certified, there's no one exam for DISC.
Okay, so if we wanted to administer this with someone later on, how would we go about that then, Dave?
How would you go about getting the profile?
Yes, if you wanted to tee up someone to actually take the profile and use it within your coaching environment, how would we go about that then? Do we tee that up through you or directly with Pearson?
That's what we're going to do. Tubing is one way. It's not the only way. But I'd be happy to do that for you if you need that kind of assistance. If not, you can do it through direct purchase from somebody else. I mean, we'll discuss that kind of on Thursday, the way to get hold of the DISC profile. But it does not require that you buy it from say it differently, Myers-Briggs, for example, or emotional intelligence, you can only purchase from suppliers if you have a certification for it. DISC does not require that from any of the publishers of DISC.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I didn't know that, to be honest. So excuse me if my question is coming from a point of view of ignorance. I'm not well-versed on the DISC.
That's okay. I didn't mean to sound if I sound too harsh. I apologize for that. It was not my intention. DISC is a tool that, say, that anyone can use, and a lot of people obviously do use it, but it's not a kind of tool that can only be used if you are certified by a governing body. I hope that helps you guys. Okay.
Well, you said you would deal with that more on Thursday, so we'll leave it to you, Dave.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's not a big deal. The exam is going to help you get through it. We'll talk to you guys about how to get hold of your profiles when you want to use them. That won't be a challenge at all. You'll find that very easy to do. Okay. All right, let's do a quick quiz. You saw that in your notes today, right? We had a quick quiz coming up. All right, so here's the quiz. What you're going to do now, you're going to apply Pure Styles. Just answer the question, who would make this statement? I want to go where everybody knows my name.
I.
I think it's an S.
That's an I.
Is it an I? I thought it would be an S. Creature of habit.
The S is the team player. The I likes the recognition, likes to be known. He's the life of the party.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Maybe.
Now, who knows the rest of the song?
Cheers.
Cheers, yeah. If you know the rest of the words, it gives you a big clue that this is more S than I.
Well,
I might say, I want to go where everybody's going to know my name because
okay.
I know they should know my name.
I'll make them know my name. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. The S is going to want the comfort of going there someplace where I'm going to walk in and they're all going to say Norm because they like me. Because I'm comfortable.
Okay.
I'm going to go there every single night. A little bit tricky, huh? How about, here's an easy one for you. Who would say, just the facts, ma'am, just give me the facts?
That's a C.
I got a vote for a C. Other votes?
C.
Absolutely C.
I would say D.
You got two votes for a C, one for a D.
E.
Yeah, this is much more of a C statement, actually. It's a C because all they're going to do is gather the facts. These, by the way, care about a little bit of facts, but not too many. They'll decide quickly. Not a whole lot of facts. All right. Who would say, ready, fire, aim.
My spouse was a D.
Yeah, it was out.
I'd go D too.
That'd be a D.
That's definitely a D statement. Ready, fire, aim. They're going to make that decision quickly. They're going to worry about the details like aiming a little later. First, we're going to fire. All right. Who would say there is no crime in dressing and being poor, only in dressing poorly?
Yeah, that's the eye.
That's got to be the eye going on.
That is definitely the eye going on. You're right. The eye's going to sit there. Yeah, that's an eye perspective if there ever was one. All right. So, okay, who's going to say, well, that's close enough for government work. Huh?
Yeah.
Who doesn't care how close it is to being right, just get it done?
I guess a D.
Yeah. That is indeed the words of a high D.
Good enough for government work. That's an interesting statement.
All right, so who would say family isn't about whose blood you have? It's about who you care for.
Yes.
I sense some real struggle out there with this one again.
Is it be the S making the connections?
It's either an I or an S because
it's going to be the S of connections.
It is actually indeed the S is going to say this, because the I is not worried about family so much. The S is very much worried about family. But if they haven't got a lot of family around them, they'll make family bring people very close to them. Remember, a few close, very, very close friends versus a lot of casual friends.
Right. Okay.
All right. So here's something. If you want something done right, you have to do it yourself.
I reckon that's a D, Dave.
Yeah, that's got to be a D.
I think whoever said C first might be the right one.
Yeah, C.
Yeah, C. I think you're right.
So C is the correct answer. D's will delegate things actually pretty readily because they'll get, more numbers of things done. Versus the quality of it. They just want to get more things checked off their list. The C's want things exactly the right way. And that's why they want to do things themselves. D's will delegate. C's don't like delegate because it won't be exactly the way I want it. All right, so here's the easy one for last. Ready? I'm so excited.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
Hi, just so excited.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yep. So that is your high eye. Yes. All right. Now spend time thinking about the details here, and you'll find out your way through these things. They're not really all that hard, but you do have to think about what it means to people who are actually responding to these things. All right, let's review session 4 real quickly. We talked about the style combinations. We talked about the fact that this is an important aspect of really using DISC effectively, and that, I mentioned before, pure styles are a place to start, and we always start there. But if you only focus on pure styles, you're going to miss all the very important points that make a person unique and allow you to really help the person get deep into solving their problems as a coach. So whether it be individual or with a group, I always start with the four basic DIS and C, but once they have that part down, we get into the patterns and help them realize that they're not just a pure style. They are a combination. In most cases, there are some people who are pure styles, but most people are going to be a combination out there. To identify that classical pattern, you're going to focus on all the points that are above the midpoint, that area above the blue shaded area. When you use the Inscape profiles, they tell you that classical pattern right on it's on page 3 of the profile itself. It tells you at the bottom of the graph which one is your classical pattern, and you can study that more closely. In session 6, we'll discuss actually how to identify and create those things on your own, because while we've been using DISC here in our class as a computer-generated tool, there is a paper profile, and I carry around with me my briefcase, because at the right time with someone, I'll yank it out and say, here, let's do this right now. And that, it's a lot more tedious because it means you have to score it yourself, which is a lot more work. But it also is a way to demonstrate your knowledge of DISC. If you can talk through it as you're scoring the profile and create the classical pattern, you demonstrate a lot of knowledge about how the process really works. And that can be very impressive, people who are maybe otherwise wouldn't quite believe in it. And knowing someone's top 2 or top 3 patterns, depending on the person, by itself doesn't always mean you know how they're going to combine together. So especially for the first really couple of years, spend some time, you know, when you identify the 2 primary and secondary style, read the classical pattern with them. Don't assume you know what it means. Read it with your client. Help them understand it. Because it's not always intuitively obvious how 2 letters play together to create that classical pattern. And if you focus only on the pure style, you are going to be not giving your client your best effort and not being successful. We also discussed those irregular patterns, the overshift, all things are above or at midpoint. The undershift, all 4 right below midpoint. The tight, all 4 surrounding midpoint. It's usually caused, you know, it can be caused by mistake. If you made a mistake, you're doing it by hand. It can be caused by mistake if you are, if the person doesn't understand the instructions. But normally it's caused by the fact that someone is not comfortable. Something's going on in their life that leaves them feeling unsure of themselves. So I mentioned before, you know, as a hiring tool, just can be used as part of your hiring process before someone comes on board. But after they're on board, give them at least 60 days or so before you give them the profile. Otherwise, you'll have to find out that they're going to be confused by what's going on and give you an irregular pattern. All right. So tonight we're going to discuss some of my very favorite patterns. We're going to start with the creative pattern. So if you look in your DISC profile, you'll find the creative pattern on page 17. Now, it's not well known, but it is a fact that the creative pattern is the best pattern of all the patterns available inside of Inkscape. Anybody know why that would be true?
Because it's you?
Because it's me. So that's not really a true statement. It's not the best pattern. I just think it's the best pattern.
Oh, because you're high D and I C.
This is my particular pattern. So let's look at this. Emotions. Accepts aggression. Restrains expression. Now, you know, most high Ds aren't going to accept aggression from somebody. They're going to be aggressive right back at somebody. But a DC is going to accept that and restrain themselves from reacting. Look at the influences others by. Ability to pace development of systems and innovative approaches. In other words, they like creativity in others as well as themselves. And they want to encourage that behavior. That can make them a very, very effective as a leader if they will encourage others around them to behave that way. But overuses bluntness, critical or condescending attitude, and something they're not going to realize. They don't realize they're being condescending. It happens, and they just don't realize it. So they have to make them aware of their behavior so they can begin to change it. Under pressure, becomes bored with routine work, sulks when restrained, acts independently. Now, you can imagine the D getting bored of routine work, but not the C, right? Because the C likes that routine work. Sulks and restrained. It's hard to imagine a D sulking and C's, do they sulk? Well, C's like this is a little bit passive-aggressive, so it kind of is that C in there that makes them behave that way. Acts independently. C's will never do that. That's the D trait coming out there. Would increase effectiveness with more warmth, like Don Rickles. Tactful communication, effective team cooperation, recognition of existing sanctions. So look at the first paragraph on the right-hand side. Persons with a creative pattern display opposite forces and their behavior. Their desire for tangible results is counterbalanced by an equally strong drive for perfection. And their aggressiveness is tempered by sensitivity. Although they think and react quickly, they are restrained by the wish to explore all possible solutions before making a decision. So you can see the opposite forces in effect there with this DC personality. I should say behavior. It can confuse people. And although it can be something very, very effective and very useful, they will see themselves quite clearly. Others may see them as being a bit of a muddled mess. So, you know, what are your thoughts and comments about what you've read about the DC creative pattern here?
Dave, so do you think that adequately describes you? How do you feel that fits you?
Yeah, a little scary how close it is. Now, I will tell you that with emotional intelligence, you can overcome many of these things. But I do know I get bored when things get a little too routine for me. And you guys didn't notice, but earlier in my career, I worked for MCI before WorldCom bought them. And I loved MCI because of the fact that about every 2 years, I'd get moved to a new job. I had a couple of bosses who looked at me as the, quote, answer man for leadership issues and underperforming departments. But every 2 years, I'd get told a new area. They'd say, this area is fixed now, Dave. This area is broken. Go fix that. So the time I was getting bored, I was on to something new. Sulks and restrained, probably true. I don't like being restrained, and it makes me very uncomfortable. And I don't fight it out loud, but I probably fight it passively aggressively. So, yeah, this fits me enormously well. Say, becoming aware of it can help you change the behavior. But especially early in my career, yeah, a lot of these things fit me like a glove. So what's a challenge you might face coaching a creative personality? What might you have a challenge there with?
I think probably pace, Dave. I mean, if you're the type of person who's going to get bored at stages, but you're also showing sensitivity, which I guess, could cover or mask a bunch of other stuff like, come on, let's get on with it. Let's make some decisions here. But you're actually thinking about, well, not really quite sure if these are the right decisions. I guess that could become quite difficult to pick up those signals as a coach. Just my sort of feeling on that. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, it does. It's the fast versus slow thing. When I'm ready to go fast, I want you to go fast. When I'm ready to go slow, you need to go slow. But how do you tell that's coming? It can be hard to judge. So you think you're, you know, somebody, you think they need to go slow here and handle this difficult problem. They made up their mind, they moved on, and you're lagging behind, and they're going like, come on, catch up, let's go. But they likely won't say that out loud until they're really frustrated.
Thought comes to mind, Dave. I think if you were my client, I might go and get a couple of flags. One's red, one's green. Stick them in your hands and say, well, you know, if you think this is going too slowly, then put up the red one. If you think we need to go quicker, put up the green.
Very nice. Give them kind of permission, if you will, to identify their behaviors, what they want. I like that. Very good. Other thoughts on this particular pattern? No? You're all afraid to say, yeah, it stays pattern, be quiet. All right. Let's move on to the next one, though. Sorry, yes, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Sandy. I just think the there's some of the restraining expression may come into play when you're trying to get at sort of emotional response to a challenge, as an example. Restraining expression, and then that sort of coolness, aloofness, or bluntness may mask sort of self-disclosure, I'm thinking.
I could see that happening, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think restraining expression sort of gives that away.
Yeah, hopefully you'll be able
to
tell someone that. It's easier if you're talking to someone in person, I think, to gauge them visually. A lot of coaching is done over the phone. It's going to be more difficult that way. So you have to listen really closely to what's being said and what's not being said to see if if they're holding back or not.
Right. So I'm thinking when you're trying to get below the waterline with this person, as an example,
yeah,
checking out, you have to really be in active listening mode to get there.
Yeah.
I would say
you do.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't want to stop you from moving on.
It's okay.
All right.
All right. Other questions on this particular pattern before I do move on?
Dave?
Yes.
Where would you say in your particular experience of being a creative, where do you think was your biggest blind spot, if I may ask?
Oh, I think that's easy. The fact that I confused people and didn't realize it. To me, I was being crystal clear, and to them, they couldn't tell if I was happy or upset. It can make you a great poker player, by the way, because you'll hide those emotions sometimes. But my employees didn't always know exactly where I stood, and I thought I was doing let me say it differently. I thought I was communicating very clearly that I really thought someone was doing a good job. Found out that they thought that I didn't like them. And I went, oh, how did you get that? For all the things I've said, but it wasn't in a way that they could relate to it as being positive. And not realizing that, you know, slowed me down. Now, I was pretty fortunate in my case. I had a couple of mentors who cared enough to take me aside and say, by the way, this might be a problem. And I said, well, explain to me how. And they walked me through it, and I went, geez, I didn't realize that. And so a DC can be very coachable if they believe in the person coaching them. If they don't believe in you as a coach, they may just kind of acknowledge, if you will, but not really buy in. Okay?
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
You're welcome. So let's move on to the counselor pattern. So the counselor pattern is an interesting one as well. And if you look at that one, it's on page 16. And that's the I and the S combined. So clearly it's a profile that's very, very people-oriented, right? The emotions are being approachable, showing affection, sharing affection and understanding. I mean, that's typical high I stuff, right? Look, Heather, over uses are the indirect approach and tolerance, the only tolerance of bad behavior. That's one of the downsides of both the I and the S, and it really comes through strongly in this particular pattern. I's want to see the best in everybody. S's want to avoid confrontation. So an I and an S in a leadership role may accept underperformance and tolerate it rather than dealing with it. And they fear pressuring people and being accused of causing harm. So you can see the sensitivity here these people have. Now, this can be a very effective pattern, but it just, you know, like all the patterns, it needs someone to help counterbalance the natural things, the natural weaknesses of the pattern, to help turn them into strengths. Now, one of the important things we should just comment here briefly is the fact that each of these patterns naturally has a strength, but keep in mind that any strength that's used too much, by definition, becomes a weakness. Okay? So what I mean by that is that if my natural strength as a high I is that I am willing to work with others and accepting of them, it can go too far if I allow it to kind of control who I am, how I'm reacting to people. Okay? So look on the right-hand side. Look at that third paragraph. Counselors often take criticism as a personal affront, but they respond well to attention and compliments for completed assignments. In a position of responsibility, counselors tend to be attentive to the quality of working conditions, provide adequate recognition for members of their group. So you can see here this would be a very effective pattern to take over an organization that was struggling with concepts around too much criticism for the group. It really could be a help to you that way. Identifying where people need to have more recognition, more acknowledgement. So, you know, when a group's kind of downtrodden, a counselor's a good person to put in there because of their high I tendencies. If you've ever watched how they train animals, and I'm not trying to pick on people here, but animal training is done by focusing very heavily on the behaviors that are positive and meet the criteria the person's trying to get. So they ignore the negative and focus on the positive. Same thing happens here with this kind of a pattern. They focus heavily on the positive and not so much on the negative. So what's the challenge of coaching a counselor pattern, do you think?
I reckon it's getting things to finality point, actually getting them to recognize when they're not being productive, they're not achieving goals.
And tell me a little more about that.
Well, I'm coming from the point of view that they may spend far too much time explaining how everybody is comfortable and they're actually moving the organization forward in terms of building the team, getting good feelings going and so on, but actually the targets that they're trying to meet are not actually being achieved because there's infighting and they're just trying to get everybody tolerant of one another.
Yeah. So they'll find reasons to accept what's gone wrong and be okay with it under the guise of it really is okay because they need to have this kind of comfort, if you will, right now. So they won't necessarily push hard for results among their team members. And that, of course, can create a problem, obviously.
So they also don't have sort of the task orientation. So their people orientation is very high. Their task orientation isn't, and they don't want to pressure people, so they may not meet deadlines.
Yeah.
So I think as a coach, you may one of the challenges would be to get them to, I think as Ron mentioned, to actually follow through and achieve sort of holding them accountable would be pretty important.
Yeah, I would agree with that because it's going to come unnatural for them to hold themselves accountable or hold others accountable as well.
And if they hold others accountable, then they won't be liked.
And that's always a challenge. Whenever you have the high I by itself, that's a challenge. Actually, they expect and want to be liked, and they can't. You know, things that make them unpopular are really major struggles for them. Okay. Questions about this particular pattern? All right. Let's go on here to the next one, which is the achiever pattern. Doesn't that sound great, the achiever pattern? I'd like to be called an achiever. Combination of an S with a secondary D. The achiever. All right. So for the achiever, look at their emotions. They're industrious. High S is industrious, really? Wow. And diligent. Displays frustration. Well, you see, it's the D influence on there because those are things that normally wouldn't happen with a high S. So that the D is playing in there. And this is one of those patterns that's the opposite we talked about before. So it's very hard to pick up on some of these things sometimes. All right. Now, look at the influences others by accountability. And an S? Hmm. Can't wait for their own work. Doesn't sound like the S's that I know. So you can see how you might be confused if you see that family orientation, the high S behavior, the friendliness. And so some of those things are out there and you're going like, what is this? This is how these things combine together. Fears. Others with competing or inferior work standards affecting results. Isn't that interesting? This is so different than what we're used to with a high S personality because of the competition involved here. That's a D factor. Increased effectiveness by with more. Reduction of either-or thinking. Well, that's not coming from a high S, obviously. Clarity of tasks and priorities. Consideration of optional approaches. That looks like they're being driven to a single solution, which is, again, a high D. Willingness to compromise short-term or long-range benefits. So you can see how if you met someone who was a achiever pattern, class D, working on a day-to-day basis, you might find yourself confused by what it is that they really find to be important. It won't always be clear to you. So it's really important to spend the time learning the people and understanding the deepness in these different patterns. Be achiever. Look on the right-hand side. Look at the bottom paragraph there. An achiever should communicate more with others to expand their thinking beyond either I have to do it myself or I want all the credit. They may need assistance to find new approaches for achieving their desired results. Achievers function at peak efficiency, and they expect recognition equal to their contribution. Well, you see a high D influence in it, because that is definitely not the S you're used to seeing. High wages in profit organizations and leadership positions in other groups. They want to be recognized. Very much the D overtaking the S, but the S is the higher style. You see why it's confusing some people as to how these styles play together?
Yeah, this one for sure.
Yeah. It's a toughie, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Dave, so would this be fair to put a label on this one saying this is the person who would blow hot and cold? Is it a fair statement?
I wouldn't say they blow hot and cold as much as you would find yourself kind of wondering what's really important to them. It may not be really clear up front what they really think is important, and that can create a challenge. You think certain things are important to them, only to find out later on they really are not. Because you look at them and say, okay, so they're a high S, therefore family orientation is going to be important to them, except it really is not. You think, get along is going to be important to them, except it really is not. Yeah. So this is a confusing pattern to people that you meet individually and start working with. You think you know what's going on, and you find out later on you really didn't have it nailed after all.
So even the title achiever then becomes a bit of a misnomer, doesn't it?
I think it does become a misnomer personally. I do believe you're right. Because, are they really going to be achieving? Yeah. Bit of a challenge. This is one of those patterns. When you meet people who have this behavioral style and you're trying to work with them to explain them how things are going to help make them better, you're gonna be finding them difficult to understand their motivation. That's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, coaching somebody like this, Dave, must be a real challenge. Have you had that experience?
Never have had the experience of coaching someone with this particular behavioral style. So that would be a new one for me as well. But you can see where the struggles would come in very naturally. You can see where the challenges would be.
As it strikes me, it would be very difficult to find points of certainty in the coaching process. I just look towards issues such as judges others by ability to achieve concrete results, but at the same time, if you go to the emotions, is industrious, diligent, displays frustration. I mean, a little bit of a contradiction there to know exactly where the person's trying to head, so setting a coaching agenda must be very, very tough.
Well, I would tell you this is a place where you have to worry about the values system of the individual involved. And I would, that's where I would start with somebody like this probably. I would start by saying, okay, so what is it that is really important to you? And let them tell you. There are a number of value profiles out there that you can have people take, or you can simply just work through them what's important. Because regardless of how their behavior is, if you know what their values are, you can coach around those things.
Dave, would you allow me to come in there again? I'm sorry if I'm hogging this a little bit, but I have tried using a couple of the value inventories out there. I've not found them, any of them actually really, really finely tuned and focused. They get close, but I'm not sure that I've actually found ones that really get to the depth of the values. They seem to dwell on values within the work environment, and I think it goes deeper than that. Do you have any suggestions in that regard?
There are two things that I really kind of liked when I did values with people. And one was a tool, I'm not sure it's out there anymore, but it was out there years ago. It was called GoalMind. And it was GoalMind. And it was a rather unstructured tool. And it was also a rather Christian-based tool. But it had a lot of information in there about identifying the values that were important to you and helping you work through those values. The other one I saw that I liked came out of Dr. Belston, actually, an emotional intelligence process, because it forced you to identify and label things as being more important or less important to you. And when I took that profile myself, I expected I'd do the results before I started. When I got done, I went, huh, they weren't what I thought it was going to be. A little different than I thought it was. So that made it useful for me to realize that it wasn't quite where I thought it was going to be. So GoalMind, and then the one Dr. Belston uses, which she created herself on values.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
What's the doctor?
I'm sorry?
What was the doctor's name?
Belston, B-E-L-S-T-E-N.
Okay.
Dr. Laura Belston. She does some CTA work as well, so you'll see her stuff out there. She's a delightful lady. And when I say she's delightful, she's definitely a high D. It was kind of funny because she specializes in emotional intelligence. And so one time I asked her, we were talking, and I said, if I had to learn EQ really well, will I be able to, in effect, mask my behavioral style, my DC? She said, I don't know. What do you think my behavioral style is? I said, well, you're a high D. She goes, yeah, it didn't work too well, did it?
Okay.
Which I tell you, I think she's delightful, but you can with a high D, you can feel the intensity under the surface. Even when they're being nice and jovial, and you can feel the intensity in a high D. All right, we got two more to get through, and one of them is critically important, so I want to make sure we get through both of these two. The perfectionist pattern is one that is really important to understand, because of the fact that you're going to find people who fit this category. And look at the emotions on the perfectionist. There's a lot of these people out there seem like. They're competent, but they're restrained and cautious. Well, what you get from a high S and a high C, right? Cautious, restrained, and competence. That makes sense. Okay. Overuses procedures. There's your high C. Fail-safe controls, your high C. Or depends on people. Huh, that's the high S. Products and processes that have worked in the past. So they're going to stay with what's familiar to them. That's the high S sticking out there. They fear antagonism. That would fit with both the S and the C. And then the would increase effectiveness with more role flexibility. That makes sense with an S and a C. Independence and interdependence, belief in self-worth. Yeah, because the S's and the C's are people who think that the environment, if you will, is negative. And so they don't have to say a lot of self-worth. So these folks are going to find that same high yes belief in things like stability and caution, that kind of stuff. But the C is going to make them get more things done correctly, if you will. The normal high S who's going to be a little bit, I don't want to say sloppy, but not as focused on the accuracy. So these are really good people to have on your work team to make sure things get done right. They don't necessarily lead all that well, but if I'm leading a team of people who want to get things done, I want this perfectionist pattern on my team with me. They'll keep me honest, make sure I don't go too fast and overlook things. All right. We've got to make sure we cover the practitioner pattern. This is really important pattern. Notice this has a high C, a secondary, and therefore opposite, I, but also an S. This is a rather unique pattern. The emotion, want to keep up with others in effort and technical performance. What's that sound like?
Like a D.
Sounds like a D, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Judges others by their self-discipline or position and promotions. Who's that sound like?
That sounds like a D.
Sounds like a D. Fears, predictability, and not recognition as an expert. Who's that sound like?
C?
Sounds like a D.
D.
There's the magic of this particular pattern. To the casual person, to the untrained DISC professional even, this particular pattern looks, it walks, it talks, it quacks like a duck, therefore it must be a D, except it's not. This is a pattern I've run into 3 or 4 times in my career. Includes situations that were really very challenging because the casual practitioners said they were high Ds. In one case, the guy even profiled as a high D, but they were not. They were this C-I-S pattern.
Wow.
Because they had behavior like a D, people treated them like a D, but what they wanted was something a little different at a personal level. They wanted more engagement from the team than you normally get from a D. They wanted more things to be right than you normally get from a D. So look at the top paragraph on the right-hand side. Practitioners value proficiency in specialized areas. They're spurred by the desire to be good at something. They carefully monitor their own work performance. Although their aim is to be the expert in an area, practitioners frequently give the impression that they know something about everything. This image is particularly strong when they verbalize their knowledge on a variety of subjects. A very, very confusing pattern. I'll tell you a brief story here that's important in terms of identifying this. Worked with a team a couple of years ago, and they had this practitioner come in who focused on DIS and C and not the patterns. They had a guy there labeled as a high D, working with others around him who were also labeled as high Ds, and they didn't get along. And the practitioner said, well, high Ds often have conflict. This is what it really is. They're just having D conflict. So I went down with the organization and down in Texas to work with them, actually. Gave them the new profiles, saw the patterns, and this guy patterned as a DI. In our working sessions, within a minute, I realized that he was not a DI, because although he challenged me on things that were not factual. He challenged me on things that were emotional. And it didn't fit his eye pattern either. So it took me about an hour to figure out what he really was. And then I had the problem of trying to help them understand that he wasn't the pattern that he profiled as. It finally came down to conflict between two people, him and one other person who was also a DI. And that person really was a DI. I could tell that. So we got him down to sit down and say, okay, let's work out an action plan on how we're going to work together more closely. And the one guy turned in a classical D list of things he wanted that person to do. He said, I will do these three things, boom, boom, boom. I want you to do these three things, boom, 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 and then we'll be able to get along better. Each of the items on his list were bullet points. They were in incomplete sentences. They were just a couple of words together. Typical high D behavior. The guy who was this particular pattern who had been labeled as a DI gave a list to us that was A, in order of importance. B, bulletized with numbers, rankings, and percentages. C, color-coded. And so I asked the question to the rest of the group, where in the DI pattern do you see this kind of an action plan? And they went, that doesn't sound like a D. That sounds more like something to come out of a C. Ah, but where's the C on his chart? There's no C on his chart. So we went through together the process of uncovering the things that were inside of his little list. And what are these? What do these statements come from? Well, this comes from a high I. All right, he's a DI. Who makes these kind of statements? Are those made by a high S? Those are high S statements. And who about these statements? Those are high C's. Where are the high D statements here? There weren't any. So when people finally realized what it was, and someone finally said, "Wait a minute, here's a pattern to match him. It's this C I S thing. This looks like what he really is." When that popped out, the person involved exploded. He was furious. And he was mad because we said he was a C-I-S, and his view was, can't be an S. S's are all weak and worthless. Those were his exact words. So in effect, he had manipulated the online assessment because of a heavy personal bias because we consider to be the worthless style, the S. Once we acknowledged what this really was, and I said, look, you're not an S, you're a combination of things, and the S first implies these traits, which are really quite positive. Once we got even past all that, we finally were able to break through the barrier, break down the walls he'd built up, be able to work with the guy again. But he looked to all the world like a high D. So, that's my very favorite pattern of all time, actually, because it's so easy to get fooled by looking at that one. Look at the person going like, yep, they're a high D. Oops, except they're not.
Dave, when you finally got past that we were able to work with him, did that all happen in one session? How long did that actually take you to get him to recognize all this stuff and then actually get into a more malleable mode, if I may?
It was an all-day session, 8 hours. the breakthrough came right before lunch, about 11 o'clock, the breakthrough came through. And then we broke for lunch. After lunch, things got much better. But he wasn't really ready to work with all the others around him for about 2 more hours. So it was a excruciating and painful process. But the breakthrough right before lunch made everything in the afternoon considerably easier than the morning was.
It sounds like you deserve a medal, Dave.
that was my most challenging client by far that I ever worked with, a group like that. But eventually you got to the point where, you know, we got the results, the client made progress, and they were happy. But only happened because I didn't let myself get too focused on the fact that others said this guy was a D, and that my instincts took over and say, what am I really seeing here? What behavior am I really seeing from this person? All right. Questions?
Sorry, just to come back in there, Dave. So basically what you were saying is this guy hadn't profiled like that, so you rewrote the profile and really pieced that together from what you could see from observable behaviors prior to him making this revelation. It was that analysis that you were presenting to him that actually broke him down. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I raise that because I'm not quite sure that my profile came out exactly how I would see myself, but it's interesting that you faced that challenge, because I think it's only by going through the behaviors, I think you're answering a lot of what I was raising right at the start of the call. I think it's only by going through that piece by piece and really sort of validating the report in a way. Is that a fair statement?
Now, I would say normally the report is enormously accurate, but there'll be times when you find disparities in it. It's not perfect. It is a computerized report. People have biases against certain words, or they don't know what certain words mean, or something just happened to them right before they took the profile that affects the way they take it. You can't get married to the responses. In fact, one thing I always do with clients who are taking the profile is I ask them to review the responses and say, tell me what things on here, well, reading through pages, I think it's 4 and 5 in the profile, look at the things in there and words that describe you. If you think they're just like you, put a check mark next to them. If you think it's like you sometimes and maybe not sometimes, put a question mark next to it. To read the statement and you say to yourself, that's just not me, scratch it out. And by doing that, letting folks scratch things out, it helps them get past the fact that there are 15 styles, if you will, and it doesn't take into account their personal values. So it may not be exactly them. This is not a perfect profile. It's a very effective profile. It's not perfect. And we have to acknowledge the fact that it's not perfect to understand how to use it effectively. Does that help?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that, Dave. I just want to drop on the table in your last session. Could you come back to that statement you made right in the first session about using DISC as a 360, perhaps? I'd be interested in hearing about that.
Oh, okay, sure. If you remind me in our session on Thursday, I'll be happy to do that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So I know we're over time. I apologize for being a little late tonight getting this thing all taken care of, but we had some good discussion. Any last questions for the evening before we sign off? Are you all terrified now of DISC?
No.
Good. Still a wonderful tool. Just have to, like any tool, you have to know how to use it and use it correctly.
Cool.
All right. Everybody have a great couple of days. We'll talk to you guys again on Thursday night.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Cheers. Thanks, Doug.